Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the home of militant moderation, where we live every day by my dear friend Alan's noble creed. We want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, your host today. Please be sure to visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. Well, the saga of the Seditious Six drags on. This would be the six former military people that are Democrat politicians. They got together with some former CIA employees that are Democrat operatives, and they put out what can only really fairly be described as a propaganda video. And the purpose of that video was to imply that President Donald Trump is giving illegal orders and that everybody in the military should ignore them because they're illegal orders. And that's what you do when, you know, Hitler gives you an illegal order. You don't obey your illegal order. And this has become a bit of a debacle for the Democrats. Now, overall, it's always hard to tell what everybody thinks about things like this. You got to take polls, and nobody trusts them anyway, to find out what the real impact of a story like this is. So from the one hand, your political pros might say that President Trump and the administration made a mistake by responding as forcefully as they did to this video. They were outraged. President Trump, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, beside themselves that these Democrats made this video. They talked about it as an act of sedition, which that is a legal charge, and they are on pretty good footing here, actually. I think this is one of the places where these Democrats went horribly wrong. They didn't bother to look up the rules about sedition. They're very arrogant. They didn't think the rules apply to them. And now they're starting to find out, oh, maybe we should have checked to see if this was okay before we made this video. But you could say Trump should have just let it go. And if he had, would anybody still be talking about this thing a week later, 2 weeks later? Would this really have had legs if Trump didn't come in swinging and say they're traitors and they should be hanged and whatever and all that stuff? There's an argument there that you don't respond so forcefully to things like this. But at the same time, there is an argument that says you don't let garbage like this go unanswered. And it is particularly important in the dangerous place where we find ourselves to start teaching the Democrat Party some hard lessons that, yes, you guys have to obey the laws. No, you guys do not get to commit treason and sedition against the government if you don't like who won the last election. Yes, elections count even when you lose, and the government is not automatically illegitimate just because you're a bunch of spoiled crybabies and you lost the last election. And that's what the Democrats are doing here. This is a very scurrilous, I think fairly could be called disgraceful effort by these people. These people should have known better. Mark Kelly used to be a captain in the Navy. He's not a stupid man. He knows what he's doing. Now he's pretending he's an idiot. He's running around and pretending he had a brain seizure and he can't remember what sedition is. And oh, why is everybody so upset at me for just repeating what the Uniform Code of Military Justice says? Well, Senator Kelly, it does actually say a few things about what you just did. And it does say you can't do what you just did. If you had bothered to read it, or your lawyers had bothered to read it, you would know that you were skating on some mighty thin ice. It's not a slam dunk case. If they go to court, and they might, there is talk afoot from Secretary Hegseth that they might drag Kelly in to face charges. He's on reserve duty, so they could switch him to active duty and bring him in to face a court martial over what he did here, and he'll get a trial, and he might win. Who knows? You know, it's the law. Military law, regular law. Never go into any trial assuming you know how it's going to come out, because that isn't how the law works. But at the very least, I think the Seditious Six, as they've come to be known, are beginning to realize they made a mistake here, and they have at least put themselves in some jeopardy. And the big mistake, the thing where they really went horribly wrong, is that none of them can say what this illegal order they're talking about actually is. So that's where you get Kelly suddenly pretending that he's a bumpkin who just fell off a turnip truck last night and saying, well, gee, all I did was read what the Uniform Code of Military Justice says about obeying illegal orders.
You know, why is everybody so upset? I mean, you would have to be an intellectual featherweight to not understand, to just be completely Cupid innocent and say, oh, gee, all we were doing is talking about what the, you know, legal orders are like, and you know how the Nazis were and all that. Well, that has nothing to do with Donald Trump. I mean, come on, please, really? Have a little dignity, guys. Stand up for what you just did there. But see, this is the thing they're in trouble for. The Uniform Code of Military Justice, the laws they're talking about, it does have some things to say about what you are and are not allowed to say as a member of the military. And one of the things that it is big on not doing is demoralizing the troops, which is perfectly understandable. The last thing you need is a bunch of irresponsible jerks running around and demoralizing the entire U.S. military with their odious public statements. And that's where these guys and Kelly and the rest of them that were and are reserve duty and so forth were active military at one time. Now, this is where they're going to get in trouble, because what they did by making this propaganda ad was directly attack the morale of the United States military. They didn't say, oh, President Trump did X and we think it's illegal, and make a case for that. If they had done that, it would have been more fairly covered by free speech, even if you disagreed with it. You know, it's still within their purview to make a political argument, but that's not what they did. They made a video giving blanket exhortations to the military to not obey any order that each and every one of them personally thinks might be illegal. And some of the people in the military are partisan Democrats, and some of them really hate Donald Trump, just the way it is. You know, it's also some of them love him. But, you know, some of the people in the military are going to take that as a signal. And remember, the other thing they did in this video, this is the other thing that's going to come back to haunt them, but the other thing they did in this propaganda video is they told everybody who they were encouraging to disobey direct orders from the commander-in-chief and the command apparatus of the U.S. military. They didn't just say Trump. They basically said the entire administration, Pentagon, civilian leadership could be ignored if you think they're giving you an illegal order. And when they were doing this, when they were laying this blanket allegation here against Trump, they said, we'll have your back. See, part of the end of the video is all of these partisan Democrats telling these absolute chumps. I mean, if you believe them, you are a sucker that shouldn't be anywhere near a weapon. But they're telling these poor victims they're trying to set up in the military that we'll have your back. If you go ahead and disobey orders and cause problems, we'll support you. We'll take care of you. We'll protect you. That's sedition's a big word. Sedition, treason, those are big words. But boy, oh boy, does that ever ice skate right up to the edge of what sedition could fairly... How could you be more seditious than that? I mean, what would you have to do in a propaganda video to be more guilty of attacking the morale and the cohesion of the U.S. military and its civilian command structure than to say something like that? Go ahead and disobey the lawfully elected president's orders because we don't like him. And if you get in trouble for it, we'll protect you. Xi Jinping, communist dictator, could have told these people to say this stuff. That's exactly what he would tell them to say if he was trying to crack the morale of the U.S. military. Vladimir Putin would have taken Mark Kelly aside and says, Mark, I want you to make a video and I want you to say this to the American troops to crush their morale so they'll be in no shape to fight Russia. And that's exactly what he would have done. He would have gone out and made a video that says, you know, you don't really have to obey orders if you don't like them, and we'll protect you if you think you have a problem with any of this. And again, the thing that is just killer, that's going to get these people in serious legal jeopardy if that's the way it plays out, is the fact that they couldn't come up with an example. Now, if they had come up with an example, if they had said President Trump ordered whatever, and suspicion would be they would talk about the strikes on drug boats, right? You know, they've been blowing up the drug boats out there off the coast of Venezuela. So suspicion would be they would say something like that and say, you know, ordering a strike on those drug boats, that might have been an illegal order. And if you get an order like that, you don't have to obey it. They would be on somewhat firmer ground. It would still be despicable that they made this video and tried to drag the military into their political shenanigans instead of just making their case to the American people, but they would be in better shape. But there's more and more of these military law experts, serving military people are coming out against the Democrats for making this video, and that's one of the things they keep bringing up. They can't, to this minute, every last one of the Sedition Six has gotten a ton of media attention because the media is giving them a tongue bath. And whenever any of them goes on TV and the fawning, adoring reporter, an example, one, not even hypothetically can they come up with, because they know if they do, they're going to sound ridiculous. You know, if they try to hypothetically make up one, it's going to sound stupid. And the other thing I think that they're worried about, they don't want to give the game away too much, that one of the reasons they made this propaganda video was to delegitimize the next election. If Trump wins, if the Republicans do well in the midterms, let's say, or if Trump passes the baton to J.D. Vance and he wins, they want to delegitimize the election in advance. So they're trying to create this hysteria that Trump is going to cancel the 2028 election and rule as a dictator. And the very strong implication in the Seditious Six's propaganda video is that that's what they're talking about. The illegal order is going to be Trump telling the military to shoot at Americans that want to overthrow his dictatorship. So, I mean, yeah, they really stirred up a pot of trouble for themselves by doing this. And it's just so arrogant and slapdash and reckless. This, above all other things, this video is reckless. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, your host today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Next year marks America's 250th birthday. And what better way to celebrate than an elevated train journey through the American Southwest? Canyon Spirit offers the adventure of a lifetime with scenic train journeys through rugged canyons and desert landscapes, along with gourmet dining and world-class service. Expansive panoramic windows allow guests to watch the magnificent scenery best seen by rail, including river canyons, red rocks, and more. Canyon Spirit travels between Salt Lake City and Denver with overnight stays in Moab, Utah, and Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And the train only travels during the day, allowing guests to enjoy the journey and relax overnight in charming small towns. TV host and travel expert Kelly Rizzo.
I think there's a certain romance to boarding a train, especially through the iconic vistas of the Southwest. Canyon Spirit offers a front row seat to these breathtaking wonders, along with historic storytelling and regionally inspired gourmet dining. It's truly a wondrous experience.
To learn more, visit canyonspirit.com.
Butterball, the best known and most loved brand of turkey in the U.S., has partnered with renowned Chef Corps brand Headley and Bennett to create the first ever Thanksgiving hosting pans. Butterball turkey talk line expert Corey Gustavik shares more.
Roasting whole turkey isn't something most of us do every day. It can be intimidating and stressful, but the right clothes can make you feel more confident and comfortable in the kitchen. That's why Butterball created the first of their kind Thanksgiving hosting pants. Designed with a fun turkey print in Butterball blue, these pants are sure to give you swagger in the kitchen while keeping all your cooking essentials within arm's reach. With custom pockets for your meat thermometer and phone, loops for your utensils and towels, and a bottle opener to keep the party hydrated, these pants will help you get a leg up in your hosting duties this year. Butterball is giving away for free one final time while supplies last at noon Eastern this Monday, November 17th.
Learn more and claim your pair of hosting pants at ThanksgivingHostingPants.com.
Adopt U.S. Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Keep a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve. It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence, Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. There was a funny exchange in the Seditious Six saga where Senator Kelly decided to wrap himself in the flag and post a picture of himself wearing his medals on his uniform and talk about how patriotic he was. And Pete Hegseth, Secretary of War, jumped on him and immediately pointed out he was wearing his medals incorrectly in the picture. And he said, if we reactivate you, the first thing we're going to do is a uniform inspection. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's ownage right there. Another scandal that is brewing in politics and the law right now is a judge dismissing the charges against former FBI Director James Comey and New York Attorney General Letitia James on the grounds that the prosecutor in that case was supposedly appointed incorrectly or unlawfully. And a lot of people are criticizing this judge for doing this, saying it's another example of out-of-control judicial activism. Here with us to talk about it is Leslie Corbley, author, poet, columnist, and attorney, and author of the book Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you know there's going to be hard feelings when a case gets dismissed, and this was a pretty important case. I mean, we're talking James Comey, the former director of the FBI.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. A lot of people wanted this case to see it stay in court, and to have the judge toss it on purely procedural grounds smells a little fishy. What say you?
It's interesting. You know, I still need to go through the full, as an attorney, I want to read like the full reason the judge dismissed it. And I saw this fairly recently. That being said, just because it was dismissed on procedural grounds, especially when it's something procedural like that, doesn't mean it can't be refiled. So we'll have to see whether the Justice Department wants to reindict these individuals and then attempt to bring, basically bring the charges again. That's not impossible by any means.
Now, that is an interesting twist in this case, because some people in the legal profession say, wait, the statute of limitations has expired at least on Comey in the intervening months. So if they try to refile it, they're not going to be allowed to. And I have heard some people that are lawyers say, no, it doesn't work that way. There's a clause that will allow them to refile the case. And it's even possible that this judge forgot about that clause. She might think she killed the investigation, but maybe she really didn't.
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I don't practice criminal law, but I would imagine my gut instinct would be that the second that there's a clause that allows it would be correct, only because if it's, I don't know if there's a look back period as far as, okay, this was dropped on procedural grounds. When would the timeline tick as far as the statute of limitations goes? I don't know the answer to that question because I don't practice directly in the criminal realm heavily, but my gut instinct would be there would be possibly a way to refile it. Now, does that mean it would be successful? I don't know. But I would imagine that they could attempt to try to refile. because I think that there's my gut instinct is that there's some kind of provision. I think there should be a 6-month period, I want to say.
Yes, that's what I've heard, a six-month interval.
I think there's a six-month, that would allow them to attempt again. Because if not, I mean, that means you could have a time procedural mistake that could allow a criminal defendant to get off scot-free. I find that unlikely based on how legal procedure works, but again, I guess hypothetically it could.
I suspect the White House will want to refile these charges because they're very serious about this. And a lot of people on the other side say this was all just lawfare. It's a vendetta, and it should be dismissed on those grounds, although that isn't what the judge said. But then some other people respond to that and say, no, these are serious wrongdoings that Comey and James were accused of. And furthermore, even if it is lawfare, how do you like the shoe being on the other foot?
Yes, well, I think that lawfare, I think whether one views this as lawfare or not is somewhat dependent on their political affiliation at this point. Now, from a legal standpoint, I think lawfare is the next step in our political evolution, if you will. I think both sides are so distrustful of one another that, it's just how human nature works. That's my opinion. I'm not saying this is or isn't law. I guess it is, in a sense, lawfare. There used to just sort of be, I think, a longstanding understanding between the parties not to engage in this type of litigation, which is interesting because that can also allow a lot of corruption to go unaccounted for. So I'm not saying that's necessarily the best route to take. But I do think that we're going to move into an era where each party is more comfortable bringing politicized cases against their opponents. I think that's going to be true for sure.
I'm sure a lot of people remember that back during the early days of the Russia hoax and all that stuff, there were some scalps that were claimed, like Mike Flynn, on purely procedural grounds. And they were what is known as process crimes, like refusing to testify or making false statements. And that was, according to the media, those charges were 100% justified. And that was going to be the beginning of the end of Donald Trump, was going to be these things. And now you've got Comey being accused of the same thing. And they say, oh, he should have some elite privilege. He shouldn't have to worry. He can lie to Congress if he wants to. You know, what's the big deal?
I know. Well, that's that. And that's one of the reasons I titled my book Progressive Prejudice, because I do think that there's sort of this implicit understanding, like I said, that, oh, we can maybe attack our opponents for crimes that we're not going to have to pay the price for. And that's really dangerous. It really is dangerous. And I don't like the increase of lawfare. But again, I'm not shocked by it, because our system has become so bloated, particularly at the federal level. And there has been a lot of corruption that goes unnoticed. And at some point, the public clamors for there to be an accounting for corruption in Washington, D.C. And I think that's really explains a lot of Donald Trump's rise and continued popularity among the public. I mean, I guess you know, is that their attempts to take him down, I think, really didn't work, partially because he was perceived by a lot of people as a victim of corruption itself, right? He was a political outsider. I think he was perceived by a lot of people as being taken out for not playing by the rules of Washington, D.C., regardless of whether he was playing by a set of rules that was or wasn't ethical. So I think that there's that problem progressives are running into. And then, like I said, there's a lot of self-righteous hubris on the left side of the aisle. I think that's undoubtedly true, of feeling emboldened to critique their opponents in ways that they aren't comfortable being scrutinized themselves. And I don't think that's healthy for the country, no matter which party does it or which side of the aisle does it. And I just think it's right now it's harder to scrutinize on the left than the right. But yeah, I guess it is a form of lawfare. I think this is where our politics is moving. I don't think this is going to end anytime soon. If anything, I think it's going to be ramped up in the coming years, and that will just become a more normative feature of American political life.
Which is going to roll right into the growing unease over activist judges, which, you know, this judge is going to be very criticized for the sort of thing. Sure, he is. A lot of other judges have been criticized for being political activists or partisans instead of ruling impartially. And I think most of the public would tell you they just want judges to be impartial and be good judges and wise and not be political activists.
Yes, it's going to be increasingly hard, though, because I think my gut instinct is there's going to be an increasing need for there to be a bridge between the public and legalese, so to speak, because whether a judge is engaging in activism is not always an easy thing to determine, right? It really is very fact specific. Sometimes the judge might just be following the law, and the procedure didn't favor a specific political outcome that really favors one political side over the other. You know what I mean? And maybe they aren't really engaging in activism, but it really appears as if they are. And so that's where my hope is there can be some kind of a bridge there, because public's going to need to be able to quickly understand what is and isn't activism.
And all the more important. I totally agree. And all the more important in a time of huge government where everything is legalized, everything goes to the courts, you know, and everything is both a political and a legal battle. Leslie Corbley, author, poet, columnist, attorney, and author of Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Hilton has once again been ranked number one on the world's best workplace list, according to Great Place to Work and Fortune. The hospitality leader has now topped the list twice in 3 years. At Hilton, its team members say the hospitality industry is where they can learn, grow, and achieve their career goals. Victoria, a sales director at a Homewood Suites property, explains.
Hospitality is the warmest industry that you can go into. The care, the nurturing, and the areas of opportunity are large. There are so many different elements in hospitality, and I don't think everyone thinks about the larger picture that they could fit into. Hilton has always been just a welcoming, open-armed, flexible place to work. I'm going to look forward in enjoying more stable work days and the ability to just have that work-life balance that I truly want.
To learn more about what makes Hilton a great place to work, visit stories.hilton.com/world's best workplace.
Small businesses face constant security challenges, from protecting property to keeping employees and customers safe. Simply Safe is stepping in with a new suite of professional-grade security solutions designed specifically for business owners. TV host and entrepreneur Chip Wade has more.
As a business owner, I travel a lot for work. And it's reassuring to have a system that not only lets me monitor my businesses no matter where I am, but it's protected by trained agents who will intervene if there's trouble. It's about knowing my offices and workshops are protected even when I can't be there.
Simply Safe Business Security offers customizable plans backed by 24/7 monitoring. Key features include AI-powered cameras, live agents who can help prevent crimes and call for help in an emergency, multi-camera live streaming, customized user access, and elevated customer support.
Simply Safe aims to give business owners just like me peace of mind so they can focus on growing their businesses, all without long-term contracts or cancellation penalties.
To learn more, visit simplysafe.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon? Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. We're talking about a judge tossing out the cases against former FBI Director James Comey and New York Attorney General Letitia James on procedural grounds. Here with us to talk about it now is Adam Hartage, CEO and co-founder of Remote Health Solutions, a special operations veteran of Iraq, Afghanistan, West Africa, Jordan, and Syria, and author of the upcoming book, The Alpha Blueprint, Preparing the Next Generation for an AI Future. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Appreciate you having me. Thanks so much. It's good to talk to you again.
You too. This is a big story. It could be the end of a story. It may not be the end of a story because there are people that are saying this is really not a problem, that this judge threw the charges out. They can just refile. And there is an exemption rule that says that even though the statute of limitations expired on the Comey charges, they can just refile the whole case within like a 6-month window and pick up right where they left off. But at the very least, even if that's true, it's going to be justice delayed.
Yeah, well, once again, we see America has a two-tier justice system, and it's live in action. I mean, if any ordinary citizen did what James Comey did, they'd be prosecuted, bankrupted, and locked up for a long time. But it appears that the powerful can just get their cases dismissed. It's really not a rule of law that we live in. It's a rule of privilege in this modern society, which is disappointing to say the least, that there is yet again no accountability for senior leaders at the highest levels in government.
That is really going to sit uneasily with a lot of people, seeing how obvious this is a case of special privilege for the elite kicking in and then skating. And Letitia James, I mean, the thing she's accused of are fairly prosaic crimes, and nobody is going to be happy with the idea that she just gets to skip away on that because she's got the right party card in her pocket. But for James Comey, this FBI director, the things he's accused of are directly relevant to his misconduct in holding that office, and he should get his day in court. Maybe he'll win, maybe he's not guilty, but the idea that he gets a free pass on a procedural thing is just going to enrage people.
Well, you know, Comey helped create the crisis that we kind of find ourselves in right now, and yet he's still walking free. I mean, he was directly involved in, you know, eroding public trust in our institutions, and that's not even in question at this point. You know, he was very clear that he weaponized federal power, he misled the American people. I mean, it just goes on and on, and this is a kind of thing that I try and warn my kids in the next generation about in that book that I wrote, The Alpha Blueprint, because, I mean, we live in a society where, you know, finding truth and being able to discern what is real becomes more and more difficult as, you know, the battle for narrative control continues, as AI is able to change things in real time. I mean, as you know, the media is certainly not going to have everyday Americans' backs, and they've proven that one over and over. So, I mean, this is a time that parents need to be raising their children to understand where to navigate to find truth and to live it and embrace it.
And that is a difficult lesson to teach when you're looking at the entire government having been weaponized and politicized, which I think is the big story lying underneath all of this. Not just the two-tier justice system and different outcomes for different party members, but also the fact that ever since Barack Obama, and really even before him, he just made it worse, the entire government has become a political instrument, and every agency in it is bent to the will of the dominant political party, the Democratic Party. And people need to understand how bad this has gotten when they cast their votes, because if you vote to put Democrats back in power, you're going to put more James Comeys in power. You're going to have more of this stuff where the government is weaponized against political enemies and acts in this unjust, unfair manner.
Yeah, well, I mean, this sets a very dangerous precedent, I think. You know, it's like when the justice system signals that politically aligned officials can violate whatever rules they want, lie, leak, and manipulate investigations with no consequences. I mean, it just invites more and more corruption. I mean, you know, it's like, This is the kind of moral rot that, you know, our founding fathers warned us about, that, you know, the Constitution is wholly unsuited for people that are anything but God fearing, you know, and it does not seem to be that our leadership in the swamp right now fears the Lord enough.
Well, and we're supposed to be a representative republic. That's the name of our system, which means we have a Congress and it has certain powers and duties. And if you can just lie with impunity to Congress because you belong to one political party or you're loyal to it and they've got your backs and they'll make sure that the case against you gets thrown out in court, that goes right to the heart of our entire system. That is a dagger poised right at the heart of the concept of being a representative republic.
And I completely agree with you. I mean, and again, you know, I will say that as this generation gets older and they start to look for, you know, heroes and where the people are that they can follow and that they can believe in and they can trust, I think it's incumbent upon themselves and their parents, frankly, to, you know, to get back to the things that really matter. And that is, you know, raising your children as good God-fearing individuals who are able to think critically and can have the strength and the individual courage and moral courage and assurity to question the official narratives that are constantly put out, which are most of the time full of lies. So
I'm sure most people would say, no matter what party they belong to, that they want an impartial justice system. They don't want Republican judges and Democrat judges fighting each other. They want judges. They just want good, impartial judges. They want the system to be impartial and fair to the extent possible. And what they're discovering is that there is so much discretion built into the system that it's just waiting there to be picked up as a political weapon for judges, for prosecutors to say, we're just not going to pursue this case because this person belongs to the right party, but we're going to come down with a ton of bricks on that guy because he belongs to the wrong party.
Yeah, could agree more. It's a dangerous time that we're in. I think, you know, with the amount of speed that reality is being changed with, more and more increasing every single day, especially as you've got, I mean, the latest with the Anthropic, you know, I know we're not really talking about that right now, but looking at how artificial intelligence was able to basically launch its own cyber attack autonomously using sort of individual agency versus, you know, program. I think that we're entering into dangerous territory, you know, both as a society and as a country.
Oh, yeah. Let me assure you, that Anthropic story scares the hell out of me. The last time I was hosting, we talked about it for a bit. And the idea that artificial intelligences can now become autonomous cyber weapons is not a happy development for the security of our future. And it does kind of loop into the question of whether systems have bias, information gaps, whether we're getting good, solid information, whether we can trust what we see and do. And in a world where everything is an illusion and reality is whatever the powerful say it is, then that creates ever more space for something like AI to run wildly out of control and maybe to begin reflecting, as we see AI does, the prejudices of the people that program and pump input into it.
Completely agree. And that's, I mean, we see, you know, that you've got this debate, especially on the conservative side, where, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, we it's best we stay away from AI. That's the mark of the beast. And that's all these other, you know, really, really bad things. And while I agree to a certain extent that there are a lot of dangers, you know, I would also counter and say that it's probably more important that the good guys are the ones that are programming the reality that we're all going to be faced with. Instead of letting the bad guys, you know, literally program a world of lies and deceit and manipulation to where nobody understands the truth about anything.
And we race towards a future where no one is certain whether anything is really objectively true. Can you trust anything the media or experts or credentialed professionals or so on is telling you anymore? After so many instances over and over again over the years, the pandemic, these political hoaxes, where we found out that people with a lot of degrees and certifications and theoretical expertise will happily conceal information from you if it suits their purposes.
Yeah, that's absolutely that's absolutely the world that we're in. And frankly, you know, I think especially those of us who are old enough to remember when, you know, people actually used to go to jail for breaking the law, I would say the real justice requires accountability, you know, not excuses. And it's either we either live in a society where there's equal justice under the law or we don't. Right now, it appears that we don't live in that kind of world. But I certainly pray that, you know, that the truth does come out about all this, that justice is served, that leaders are held to account, but I'm not really going to be holding my breath, you know, this week.
Well, for too many of the little people, of the regular folks, you're guilty of breaking laws you don't even understand, that you didn't even know existed. There's that old saw that every one of us is guilty of, what, 5 or 7 felonies a day if the government really decided to come after us for all the things we're doing that we don't even know are illegal. But then we see people with the right amounts of power and connections, they get to walk away from doing blatantly illegal things.
Yeah, well, you know, in my book, I tell parents that America's future depends on raising children who can see through the deception, you know, whether by corrupt officials or from an AI propaganda standpoint. And, you know, the Comey outcome of this situation is a perfect example of why we must prepare the generation of leaders and not followers, and somebody to be able to tell the difference between truth and fiction.
Exactly, right. Absolutely. So glad to have you. A big component of leadership is the dogged pursuit of the truth, no matter where it will lead. And a true leader is always looking for what is true, even when that can be hard to find. Adam Hartage, CEO and co-founder of Remote Health Solutions and author of the Amazon bestseller, The Alpha Blueprint, Preparing the Next Generation for an AI Future. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Would you know where to turn if you or loved one suddenly became paralyzed? Paralysis isn't something you plan for, but the National Paralysis Resource Center has served as a vital lifeline for thousands of families. But federal funding for the program is at risk. Marine veteran Sherman Gillums Jr., Senior Director of Public Policy at the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, says the consequences could be devastating.
This is about more than just a budget line. It's about veterans, caregivers, and families, real people who need these resources to live more productive and independent lives.
Gillums, who lives with paralysis himself, says cutting this funding would remove critical resources like peer mentoring, help with housing, and job placement guidance.
When you take away these lifelines, people must figure out how to rebuild their lives on their own. And that's not something any family should have to do.
Learn about the importance of funding for the National Paralysis Resource Center at ChristopherReeve.org.
On Sunday, November 2nd, Americans will fall back to standard time, despite growing concerns over the health and safety risks of seasonal time changes. According to sleep experts, making standard time permanent could improve the lives of millions, and the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time and its partner, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, are working to make that a reality. Dr. Karen Johnson, sleep medicine physician and co-chair of the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time.
When our schedules align with the timing of natural light, people benefit from brighter mornings, safer commutes to work and school, and improved sleep at night.
Want to lessen the effects of the time change? Try these tips. Get at least 7 hours of sleep per night before and after the change. Adjust the timing of daily routines like meals and exercise, and head out for early morning sunlight during the week after the time change. For more information about ending daylight saving time and to find additional resources about sleep disorders, treatments, and sleep health, visit sleepeducation.org, sponsored by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you,
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. The story of Christian persecution in Nigeria has taken a few interesting turns. President Trump called attention to it a couple weeks ago, said that he was really upset with the Nigerian government for not doing enough to prevent it. He was ready to send in U.S. troops, guns a-blazing, as he put it. If necessary. The Nigerian government said, we don't know what you're talking about. There's no Christian persecution over here. The Nigerian answer was basically, hey, everybody over here is getting victimized by crime all the time, but there's no organized campaign against Christians. And then, like a string of firecrackers going off, there have been these high-profile jihadi attacks on churches and Christian schools over the last couple of weeks, resulting in hundreds of people being kidnapped and dragged out into the bush. And once again, the Nigerian government seems incapable to do a thing about it, which is the recurring story every time there is a tale of Christian persecution from that country. Here with us to talk about it is David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel in the West Bank, founder and president of the Shiloh Children's Fund, and author of the book Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. His website is www.israelchildren.org. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, thank you. Good to be with you.
I've been writing about Christian persecution in Africa and in Nigeria and around the world for a long time, and I know a lot of the activists in Nigeria have been saying we've been complaining for years about organized attacks to wipe out entire villages, about people being dragged away by these jihadi gangs and forced to convert to Islam, and nobody would listen to us. The whole world turned a deaf ear to the stories of what was happening. Now President Trump calls attention to it, and I swear every major media organization is just parroting what the Nigerian government says and running stories that say President Trump, without evidence, talks about Christian persecution. And then you get stories about churches being wiped out and the entire congregation being hauled off as prisoners.
Well, persecution of Christians around the world is a topic that hardly is ever spoken about. And, you know, if you talk about like we Israelis do very often, about October 7th and what happened on October 7th with all of the murders and the hostage taking of Israeli civilians and the raping of women and beheadings, all of that has happened in other parts of the world as well. It's an extreme, radical, Muslim strategy to humiliate and intimidate and frighten everybody else. And, you know, if you ask most of your listeners, probably have never heard of the Boko Haram. Boko Haram is a radical Muslim terrorist organization in Nigeria. It's very active in Nigeria. And all of these things that you're referring to are carried out by the Boko Haram. Everyone in Nigeria knows about them. And all of their activities. It's just horrible what is being done there. But because they're Christians and not Muslims, so the victims are kind of ignored. And
there's also
a big problem.
There's another jihadi group active in Nigeria called the Islamic State West Africa Province, or ISWAP, and they actually are kind of an offshoot of Boko Haram. They were Boko Haramers who wanted to be more loyal to ISIS, and they wound up splitting away and becoming their own group. They fight each other occasionally, but they're equally vicious. They're both interested in organized campaigns of violence, and both of them have been known to just extinguish entire villages. They'll go in and shoot the whole village up, burn everything down, drive everybody off to refugee camps, and they're doing it explicitly because those people are Christian and they want to get rid of them and make sure they never come back. That is a little different than the random Muslim being victimized by bandit violence that the Nigerian government often talks about.
Oh, sure. No, it is an ideology, and it's not a question of the average civilian in Nigeria, but it is a strategy that is carried out. And it's carried out throughout the world. You know, you mentioned, two different Muslim terrorist groups that are active in Africa. So then you could also just look at Israel. You know, I noticed you mentioned my book, Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. So here's something you can learn from Israel. When you have a radical Muslim group, such as Hamas, there are always going to be offshoots that have the same basic philosophy, but maybe one is slightly more radical than the other. So you'll have the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is another radical Muslim group that's active in Israel and in attacking Israeli civilians. So they're in Nigeria. So you have offshoots from the Boko Haram. But they have the same philosophy, the same jihadist philosophy. And jihad, for those of your listeners who don't know, means holy war against the unbelievers. Who are the unbelievers? Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, anyone who is not a Muslim.
It is a recurring story in these tales from Nigeria that the government never does anything when the jihadis attack somebody. There's usually military patrols in the area, but they don't respond. The people in the villages say they screamed for help and nobody came. The local police had to fight a battle against heavily armed militants who had them outgunned like 20-1. And then they walk away with 300 prisoners, and you turn the cameras back to Nigerian high command and they shrug and say, well, what can we do? They disappeared. We don't know where they are.
Well, they have a problem in Nigeria, that Nigeria is almost equally Christian and Muslim. You have a split of the population. And, you know, nobody likes to say this, even though we in Israel have found that it's true, certainly in Gaza and Judea and Samaria, the so-called West Bank. We've seen that, yes, there are terrorist organizations. Those are the people who are armed and who are attacking people and raping people and killing people. But then you also have the civilians that sympathize with them. For instance, in Gaza, we have 85% of the civilian population that supported the massacre of October 7th. So I imagine that you have a similar situation in Nigeria, where there are many Muslim civilians who wouldn't actually commit terrorist attacks and wouldn't actually join a terrorist group, but they're quietly cheering them on. And when you have that, and when they're infiltrating the government and their whole positions, that's a problem.
I noticed the Nigerian government over the past week, they've started shutting schools down because the schools aren't safe anymore from kidnap gangs. And they've been stressing that they want people to say something if they see something, you know, and speak up a little more. So I guess at some level they know they have a problem there. And we'll have to hope that these people that have been kidnapped are returned safely to their families. David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and author of the book Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your host today. Thanks for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.